Krueger here, and you're listening to Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the crew this week in Geek.net.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geeks Nerd News Network, and I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. Well guys, today is Friday, October 3rd, 2014. Technically, I'm in the past, the future, I don't know. Anyway, I'm actually not really here. Whoa! That's right, guys. This weekend, I am in Las Vegas, thanks to the good folks over at 7-Eleven and NOS Energy Drink. I'm finally going on that long-awaited trip that I won. I'm going to be meeting Batroc the Leaper tonight, George St. Pierre at the Hakkasan nightclub in Las Vegas, and oh my god, I'm going to be surrounded by people that are much more beautiful than I am, and, well, it's going to be like a goldfish in a shark tank, I assure you. But I'm still going to have fun. There's going to be some other Canadian winners there, so I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. There'll be lots of pictures on my Instagram and Twitter, which is at BirdmanDodd. You can find out more information about that. So, kind of decided this week, before we get into the nerd news, we're going to do a little bit of housekeeping. I've kind of decided, because review shows tend to get spaced out a little bit until we have enough content to review, I'm going to include a weekly Birdman's pick at the end of each episode, where I'll do like a 2 to 3 minute piece on something that I find interesting. And this week, I'm going to be taking a look at Cubicle 7's Doctor Who Adventures in Time and Space, the limited edition rulebook. And I gotta say, I was pleasantly surprised by this. Why? You'll have to keep listening to find out. And while I'm on that, I want to send a shout out to my friend Amanda, who may or may not be listening to this show today. This is a friend of mine I've had since grade school, just recently got back in contact with her. That's tremendously cool. That is the power of the interwebs. And hey, what can I say? Having technology work for you rather than against you is obviously a marvelous thing. And I'm excited to be chatting with this person yet again. What else is going on? Right. Topic show is delayed till next Tuesday. Frankly, this week just got away from me in terms of getting production done. Plus, the Twig Studio mixer died. So I'm literally living on borrowed time. I'm actually using Scotty's mixer until we can get a new one. If you feel like donating, drop me a line, mike@thisweekingeek.net. I'm accepting any and all donations to get things going. But speaking of donations, I'd much rather you donate to Toronto Sick Kids Hospital via Extra Life. You can find out more information about that at birdmangivesback.com. I go live on October 24th at 10 p.m. Eastern and going all the way till Sunday, October 26th, where I will sleep for 3 hours and then watch Hell in a Cell on the WWE Network because I'm not paying Rogers for that. Anyway, all right, guys, got a lot of cool stuff to talk about this week. Well, as you can see, since we're doing things a little bit early, the week has kind of been a little bit slower than usual, but still lots of interesting stuff that has come up this week in the world of geek, nerd, and dweeb, if you will. I am actually going to talk about the Twilight series of books. I know, but I'm talking about movies that may or may not actually suck, depending. We're also going to be talking about the Retron 5, which, as you guys know, it's the 5-slot console that plays anything from the NES all the way up to the Game Boy Advance. And it's evidently in some majorly hot water. And how the U.S. is kind of taking planetary defense as a rather serious threat. And let's just say Bruce Willis and his team of drillers will, in fact, save us one day. We're also going to talk about how Netflix is going to be fighting with some of the largest cinema chains in Canada and the U.S. And it's going to be a drag-out brawl, if early reports are to be believed. And finally, we're going to talk about a movie that has no right existing, but hey, I thought the Lego movie was going to suck, so who knows, maybe this will actually be good. Alright, so let's start with the big elephant in the room, Twilight. As you guys know, this was a multimedia phenomenon several years ago, and people still make kind of pokes at it saying, I don't know, RoboCop, still a better love story than Twilight or something like that. So obviously, Twihard, for those of you that don't know, the whole five of you that have been living in Guantanamo Bay or some other similar accommodations, lucky you, it is the story of Bella Swan and how she's in love with a guy named Jacob who happens to be a werewolf, a guy named Edward Cullen who happens to be a centuries-old vampire. Well, I guess he's not really centuries old. He's older, and he spends his entire time of immortality going back to high school. He must be really good at really, really simple math. Anyway, so the main reason I bring this up is the Twilight Saga is coming back. And it's not exactly a reboot, but it's actually going to be 5 short films that are going to be set in the universe. And they're going to be based upon the broad spectrum of Twilight characters. And they're actually going to be made in association with the women in film. And what it says, and this comes from author Stephanie Meyer, "The female voice is something that has become more and more important to me as I've worked in the film industry," said Meyer. "I'm honored to be working with Women in Film, Lionsgate, and Facebook on a project dedicated to giving more women a chance to be heard creatively." You know what? I actually went on record. I did a show a couple years ago with, I know it was Ryan and some other guests. I think maybe Dave. And we were talking about how the Twilight universe, in essence, has potential to be interesting. If you ignore all the sparkly crap, there's kind of an interesting kind of mythos there. And I would be really interested to see what else could be explored. Like, I know, I think one of the Cullens, Jasper, I think it was involved in the Civil War, if I'm not mistaken. When you become a vampire, sometimes you manifest abilities, kind of like the X-Men. So, kind of like how Bella has that shield ability. There are ones that can control earth and fire and everything. The Dakota Fanning can randomly cause pain. So, this could be really interesting. Now, they're only going to be short films. So, I'm picturing like between 5 to 10 minutes each. Obviously, not a super high budget. But the thing is, you can do a lot with After Effects. And if these people are really creative and caring about their projects, these could actually be kind of cool. Now, that being said, I'm not going to lie to you folks. I actually have seen all the Twilight movies, and I didn't mind the third one. Though, Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1 was completely unnecessary. And just creepy vampire baby thing. Just stupid. But still, who knows? So hopefully this will be more successful than Stephanie Meyer's other project, The Host, which is just so stupid. But you should look up Fanboy Flicks, which is one of the guys I went to school with, Mark Lammert. He does that series, and he took a look at The Host a couple of months ago. It's funny stuff. All right, so this one, actually, I think it was Alpha Omega Sin did a video on this the other day, talking about the Retron 5 made by Hyperkin. And for those of you that don't know, the Retron 5 is, as I mentioned in the opening, a console that plays Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Super Famicom, Genesis, Mega Drive, Famicom, Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Color, and regular Game Boy games. And the thing is, there's a good chance that the software used to power all these emulators is likely stolen. So I'm going to read you this story, and then we can all kind of talk about it together here. This story comes to us from joystick.com. Hyperkin's Retron 5, the 5-slot console that plays cartridges from the NES up to the GBA, violates several licenses. According to the group behind open-source project RetroArch, a post from the group claims that the Retron 5 incorporates the Genesis Plus GX and SNES 9X emulators, both of which are filed under non-commercial licenses that restrict them from being used in a commercial product. The post also argues that the Retron 5's use of open-source emulators, FCE-UM for the NES games, VBA Next for GBA games, is problematic. Both emulators are licensed under the General Public License version 2.0, but the Retron 5 uses GPL Level 3 grade code, which is technically incompatible with the FCE-UM and the VBA Next coverage under GPL V2. Lastly, the authors claim that there are traces of the RetroArch source code in the Retron 5's front end, the interface that the users use to interact with. The RetroArch code appears to be licensed under GPL Level 3, which forbids TiVization, the acts of incorporating open-source copyleft software in a locked-down piece of hardware that doesn't allow users freedoms granted by a license like the GPL. The post also claims that attempting to modify the Retron 5 with anything beyond updates supplied by Hyperkin voids the console's warranty, and since GPL Level 3 forbids TiVization, the Retron 5's alleged restriction of modifying RetroArch's open-source code would be illegal. The Post finally concludes, this is a lot, guys, that none of the authors were contacted in regard to the alleged use of the Genesis Plus GX, SNES 9 Next, or the VBA Next emulators, and as a Hypekin has given no credit in its alleged use of the RetroArch code. As of the time of this writing, Retron 5 controllers are available on the Hypekin online store. The console itself is listed as out of stock and not offered on Hypekin's Amazon page. Now, I have seen a few of these out in the wild. There is a store near me in Barrie called Power Up Games. I know they had one as of like a month ago. So, my guess is legal trouble going to become a knocking for Hypekin. And I don't know why Hypekin would do this. I mean, yeah, just because it's on the internet doesn't mean you should be doing it. Now, according to this, I'm looking at their website right now. You cannot get these things anymore. Like I said, you can get the controllers, and they're available for $40, but the consoles, you have to log in to be a registered reseller only. So I'm not sure what that precisely means. I know some of my friends have these. And I suppose it was only really a matter of time before someone took quote-unquote open source software, put it in something, and tried to license it for commercial use. So why you are playing with fire is utterly beyond me, because frankly, you're messing with the internet, and the internet don't like to be screwed with. And the authors of these emulators, I can see them getting frankly pissed off. And someone has stolen their hard work and, frankly, their intellectual property. Now, the fact that these are emulators does kind of present, in my opinion, a gray area, because you're supposed to be playing quote-unquote backed-up software. And for those of people that run in pirate circles and run pirated software, we all know what that really means. So, I don't know. I'd like to see how Hypekin's going to respond to this. When things happen, if there is going to be any legal papers filed, and on behalf of who. And so this is a story we're probably going to keep an eye on for, but you done goofed. And there's going to be people coming for you with very large bats, I'm going to imagine. Speaking of large bats, aka the proverbial big stick, evidently the U.S. is saving nukes so it can blow up asteroids. These things are being stored under quote-unquote planetary defense. So the government, for a number of years, the U.S. government has said that there's a thing called nuclear disarmament, where they reduce the nuclear stockpiles, right? From, you know, back in the days of the Cold War and whatnot. So anyway, I'm going to read you something, and this is one of the reasons that was given to government auditors. This is one reason. For potential use in planetary defense against Earth-bound asteroids, NNSA officials told that the CSA is associated with a certain warhead indicated as excess in the 2012 Production and Planning Directive are being retained as an indeterminable state pending a senior-level government evaluation of their use in planetary defense against Earth-bound asteroids. While NNSA has declared the CSAs to be in excess until March 2013, had scheduled for them assembly beginning in the fiscal year of 2015, if the National Labs retention letter has also characterized that the CSA associated with this warhead as an irreplaceable national asset, the WDD program, coordinating with the NNSA's evaluation of their use in planetary defense, with the support of the LLN, a lot of acronyms is what we're getting here. But either way, the government isn't dismantling old nukes. And the NNSA stands for the National Nuclear Security Administration. So that's interesting that they're going to be U.S. Now, the Wall Street Journal, which is the group that first reported this, notes that scientists aren't necessarily concerned with a massive planetary extinction level asteroid more than a kilometer in length. More like they're not worried about that for at least the next 100 years or so. But since you look at something what happened, say, last year in Russia with an asteroid that was just 20 meters in diameter, you know, that there's a threat there. So you kind of have to wonder what's kind of going on up in the sky, so to speak. And there are times where we don't get more than a couple of days with these NEOs, which stands for near-Earth objects. And now, typically, we can track a lot of these objects above a certain size, but occasionally one slips through. And if a nuclear weapon could potentially be sent into orbit or maybe out past the moon or something to take care of these objects, I don't see it as a bad thing. But one of the questions I have to ask is who's in charge of space? Now, I know there's the Outer Space Treaty, which prevents any one nation from claiming another terrestrial body. For example, Canada couldn't claim, say, Mars as a Canadian soil or something like that, just like the U.S. and Russia couldn't claim the moon. And that's something that the United Nations has all agreed upon. So, I don't know. Although, I remember hearing something in the news, like, within the last year or two, how certain aspects of the Outer Space Treaty have not been renewed, and not every country has signed it when it comes to the militarization of space. So I kind of wonder what this would fall under, because these would be nukes going into orbit, but they would be classified as planetary defense weapons or irreplaceable national assets. So I don't know. Interesting stuff, though. Just the fact that they're at least taking this threat seriously, at least on the surface, I think is at least promising. And at worst, I've got more bombs than you. Ha diddly ha ha. All right, moving on to my second to last story. Cinema chains, they may be potentially boycotting Netflix's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sequel. Companies owning more than half of the U.S.'s IMAX screens are frankly pissed right off that the film is going to be released simultaneously in cinemas and streaming online. So once again, I'm going to read you part of the story coming to us from TheGuardian.com. Furious cinema chains have threatened to boycott the forthcoming sequel to the Oscar-winning martial arts epic, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, following Netflix's announcement that the film will be available to view on the same day as it hit cinemas. The streaming service announced Monday that it is teaming with the Weinstein Company, the firm owned by famed Hollywood super producer Harvey Weinstein and his brother Bob, to co-produce the new movie. They plan to debut Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, The Green Legend, simultaneously at IMAX cinemas globally and via Netflix on August 28th next year. However, AMC, Cinemark, Regal, Carmark, which together own more than half of the U.S.'s 4,400 IMAX screens, all said they would refuse to screen the film. Also should be noted that Cineplex Odeon in Canada is also going to be joining in this boycott likely as well. They're angry because the plan radically ignores the long-understanding theatrical window, which means that new movies are not usually made available to view at home for at least 13 to 17 weeks after their release in cinemas. Europe's second-largest chain Cineworld and Canada's largest chain Cineplex also said they would not be screening the sequel. This is kind of stupid. Now, Disney had at one point said they wanted to shorten that run to 12 weeks back in 2010. And I can see why cinemas might be pissed off, because they make a lot of their money by putting, well, frankly, asses in seats. But they also make money off of selling concessions and other things at the theater. It basically keeps the brick and mortar open, right? And frankly, cinemas are a social experience. It's a place to take dates. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's a good time. But when you factor in, say, you and your wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, taking out the family, let's say you're taking out the family, that could easily be over, like, $100. And that's including pop and popcorn and, you know, sodas, whatever. That's a lot of damn money. Whereas you could pay anywhere from $8 to $12 a month for your Netflix, and you can sit at home and you can pause it. Or if you don't like it, you can just turn it off and you can walk away. So I can see why these cinemas would be pissed. At the same time, I think of something that happened earlier this year, and I got to thank my wife, Blair, for actually pointing this out to me. Earlier this year, Veronica Mars came to cinemas in, I think, really late March or very early April. And you could buy the movie digital distribution on the same day that it premiered in cinemas. And I think if you were a Kickstarter backer, I think you got it early too, but I'm not 100% sure of that. But still, you could do this, and nobody got pissy about that. So I'm a little confused as to why these people are kind of mad. But then again, Netflix is a constant streaming service for only $8 a month. Now, when you stay in a hotel, or you travel on an airplane or a bus or whatever, sometimes they have first-run movies in the hotel room or on the bus or on the airplane. So why not offer the same convenience to the consumer? And here's the idea I had. If you think this is stupid, feedback at thisweekingeek.net. I would love to hear from you on this one, especially this one. I would be willing to pay like a video on demand service, much like we have now through most cable and satellite providers. If there's, say, a first run movie, if I want to watch The Avengers 2 at home, I'm willing to pay that $15 instead of going to the cinema, right? So at least someone's getting money for this, and I have the convenience of being able to turn the movie on and off when I want, pausing, because I hate going up to the bathroom. As you guys know, I've got a bit of a physical handicap, so it's a little hard for me to get back to the from my seat into the bathroom a little bit quickly. So this is really convenient for me. And there are sometimes I just don't want to go to the theater. Like, I don't want to deal with, the stupid kids in the back, or I don't want to be that guy causing problems. In fact, I'm notorious for going to certain movies and trolling people. That's right, I'm an asshole. For example, whenever Blair would go to the Twilight movies and girls would go, "Oh my God, it's Jacob, it's so hot," I would laugh uncontrollably at them. I am a terrible person, but that's okay. So what are your guys' thoughts on this? Do you think cinemas have a right to be mad, or is Netflix merely paving the way for the future? So once again, I would like to see. In fact, one of the spokesperson for Regal has actually added, "While a home video release may be simultaneously performing in certain IMAX locations, at Regal we will not participate in an experiment where you can see the same product on screens varying from 3 stories tall to 3-inch wide on a smartphone. We believe in the choice for truly enjoying a magnificent movie is clear." And certain movies, I think, should be seen in theaters. Like Gravity, way better in theater than it was at home. I'm not saying it's unwatchable, but it was way better when you really felt the vastness of space. Or seeing Optimus Prime, like 3 stories tall. Or the Hulk rampaging through New York. Those are things you want to see in a theater. Do I need to see Ryan Reynolds in the latest romantic comedy at 3 stories tall? No. All right, final story this week. I can't believe I'm actually talking about this. In the long plethora of video game movies, we've had Doom, we've had Mortal Kombat, there's even a Mass Effect movie underway. But coming soon, I don't know when, but soon, Tetris. That's right. Let that sink in for just a moment there. The Tetris movie is happening, and this is coming to us from Threshold Entertainment, the same guys who brought us Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2 Annihilation, and they're teaming up to make this happen. And Threshold Entertainment, Larry Kasanoff has said, "It's a very big epic sci-fi movie. This isn't a movie with a bunch of lines running around the page. We're not giving feet to the geometric shapes. Brands are the new stars of Hollywood. We have a story behind Tetris, which will make it much more imaginative. So far, no cast, no crew, production date, or release date has been determined. No writer has been named." Now, admittedly, I thought the Lego movie, like, how the hell do you make a movie out of Lego? And I was so totally wrong. And it worked. How are they going to make a sci-fi movie out of Tetris is kind of beyond me. Like, I don't even know how the hell they're making an Angry Birds movie. In some ways. But hey, at least it's not friggin' Flappy Bird. So, Tetris the movie. Do you want to see that on an IMAX screen? I'd rather play it on a 3-story. Man, that would be really cool, actually. To play Tetris on an IMAX screen. I can only imagine what the lag would be, though. Anyway, obviously thinking about it too hard. So, as promised, I'm going to start ending certain episodes with a sort of Birdman's pick. And this one, as I mentioned, is Doctor Who Adventures in Time and Space, specifically the limited edition rulebook. Now, this is something you can find right now through a lot of places like, say, Amazon.com. You can pick it up off of the Cubicle 7 website. And this is, it's basically what's in the box set that came out a couple of years ago, but updated. And that's what I really like. It's got a lot of new artwork in it. It's also everything that was in the box set, all the separate booklets in one book. That is so much more convenient, but the box set does have its own charm as well. And seeing this, it's got updated character sheets, and the thing that really sold me on this, not just for the convenience of having the game in one book, now you get stats for the most up-to-date Matt Smith stats, which would have been as of Day of the Doctor, You have stats for Amy Pond, Rory. The stat that really stood out to me was the War Doctor. The first time this guy's ever been in print. So I wonder if they will reprint this, or his stat block, for when the Eighth Doctor source book comes out in probably just a few months. I'm kind of curious where he's going to fit in there, or whether he'll be included in the Ninth, or the... Basically, he could appear in any of the books, in 9, 10, or 11, depending on where he was picked up in the timeline. But the fact that he is here, that is astounding. Plus, you're also getting Rose Tyler, and you're getting the 10th Doctor as well, with, once again, updated stats. So, I've never had a chance to look at Rose and the 10th Doctor from the previous box set before the Matt Smith edition, which came out back in 2012. So, it's a really nice book. I really appreciate, like I said, the kind of new kind of art layout thing. It just, it seems like it's a lot more nice put together as a whole. And the cool thing about the Doctor Who Adventures in Time and Space is literally everything you need to start the game is in the main source book. You do not need splat books, although I'd highly recommend the Time Traveler's Companion. It is very hard to find, but it is so ridiculously worth it. There's also individual source books, which you could pair up with this if you wanted to recreate that sequence at the end of the episode. Although, we don't have stats yet for Peter Capaldi, but, you know, I'm hoping maybe they'll do maybe, like, one of those PDFs for Christmas or something. Where, like, hey, here's an adventure. Have fun. Because there are Doctor Who downloads available on the Cubicle 7 website. So, yeah, like I said, if you can find this, absolutely worth it. I think it's one of the more useful limited edition books, because you are getting new, like I said, new updated stat blocks for people. And, you know, just some of the layout to this book is really nice. They've got, like, they actually have that piece of artwork that was done for a lot of the DVDs, where it shows all the Doctors in incarnations. You've got more like bad guy spreads. Either way, it's really, really, really cool. Hopefully we're going to be playing this on These Warriors Are Terrible later on this year for the Christmas special. I think Steve's running that one. I don't know whether I'm involved or not. So I guess we'll just have to kind of wait and see. So anyway, guys, that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of Nerd News Network this week. Like I said, topic show on Saved by the Bell will be coming up next Tuesday, probably into Wednesday morning, because I'll be editing the show pretty much live. In addition to that, I should be doing another show with James Rolfe. We're not sure what we're going to be talking about just yet, so hopefully you guys are going to be watching Monster Madness as it premieres over the week and into the weekend. And I will be posting lots of pictures from Batroc Zilliper in Vegas. I will hopefully be seeing Penn & Teller. I will be stalking Carrot Top and stealing his buff magical abilities. It's what I do. So anyway, guys, until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, have yourselves an awesome weekend. I know I'm gonna live free or die hard. Catch you guys again next week right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
You gotta keep that.
Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my God, whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.